dictionary definition of music is the art of arranging sounds in time through the elements of melody, harmony, rhythm, and timbre. Low-pass filter is a show about the nature of this thing we call music, how it functions in people's lives, how it's contextualized by society, and why we find certain music meaningful. This is Low Pass Filter. Welcome back to Low Pass Filter. Matteo Noce here, Dan and Wayne there. We're back with another exciting episode of Low Pass Filter. So, as our custom, each week we go back and forth. Each of us picks a topic, alternating months. And this month, it's your topic.
It was my choice this month, and I kind of got off into the weeds a little bit, trying to kind of conceptualize how we find identification of who we are with the music we identify with. But we kind of felt that was a little bit esoteric, so we kind of honed it into fashion and music, or how music inspires fashion, or fashion inspires music, and then from there maybe how we're drawn to that side of it.
Yeah, no, I think that the initial concept works, because if you think about it, music and musicians and artists have inspired what we wear down through the ages.
Exactly.
Maybe consciously, maybe subconsciously, but a lot of the times they got us started on whatever it is that we're wearing. And now people don't even know why they're wearing it anymore, but it can often be traced back to, you know, an individual or a genre of music or a group of fans. So in my research, the thing I don't have anything from this on our list, but I went back a little further than we usually go, which is back into the jazz age. And so if you think about flappers, you know, that whole sort of proto-feminist movement where women cut their hair, they wore dresses that came up above their knees and high heel shoes, and went out dancing and drinking in speakeasies and that sort of thing. The jazz era movement sort of inspired a whole look for women.
Yeah,
kind of got them out of bustles and, you know, floor length dresses and that sort of thing.
Indeed, and for that, you know, it's 100 years ago now, but at that time, that was an era of empowerment for women. I thought about that a bit too, the jazz era, but I realized most jazz musicians wore suits.
That's right.
And that's, you know, an ageless type of garb. But women got a little more flamboyant with it, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I think maybe the era, instead of the musicians themselves, maybe just the fact that the music was in the air and that was part of the scene and the... kind of an offshoot, you know, unintended consequence of the jazz era was sort of liberating women from wearing, you know, kind of burqa-like, you know, outfits, you know.
Yeah, and I think also there would be the dance movement that went along with that as well, you know. Maybe in some jazz shows people were just sitting at tables and enjoying the music, but in a lot of situations people were getting up and dancing, and then, you know, that was an era of real swinging music.
Yeah.
So that would inspire how people wanted to look as well.
Sure.
What looks, good while you're dancing.
Yeah, so or what's easy to dance in. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then the other thing before we kind of get into the modern era, or it's a semi-modern era, but Frank Sinatra, had a whole cadre of Bobby Soxers.
Yeah, yeah. So, you've mentioned that before.
Yeah, my mom was among those Bobby Soxers, yeah. And they wore saddle shoes and Bobby socks and poodle sweaters and
right.
and that sort of thing. And that was sort of the uniform of his followers,
yeah.
his female followers in the 1940s.
Yeah. So that starts to define how the interest in that subculture of music influences a group of people in how they want to look, how they want to express their connection to that cultural thing.
Yeah. And then I think taking us into the, you know, the mid-century, of course, is Elvis.
Yeah.
You thank you very much. You can't really say, I mean, he was such an influence on all sorts of culture.
Yeah.
But he, I think he made it safe for people to wear denim. You know, there's the Jailhouse Rock denim jackets and pink shirts. And you were talking about how, you know, jazz musicians wore suits. And really, all popular singers of the day wore either a suit or a tuxedo, perform in. That was the uniform. And he kind of busted that open where he could wear a sports shirt or, not wear a, zoot suit. Thing.
As an entertainer and a performer, you didn't have to be formal.
Right.
You could essentially look like the people that were there to see you perform in a way.
Yeah.
I'd like to add that he also, I'm sure, was hugely influential on male hairstyles.
Well, yeah. Absolutely.
You see Elvis up there, you want to have your hair like Elvis.
Well, and also if you think about it, I didn't think about this till just now, but he never wore hats.
He didn't. No.
And everyone wore a hat at that time, basically. That was everyone. If you look at like old films of people walking down the street, everyone had a hat on.
Yeah.
And he, I think he kind of started the idea that you could get rid of the lid, you know.
Which probably in some way led towards growing your hair a little shaggier, letting your hair out, mm-hmm. making your hair a statement.
Yeah.
With a hat. The hat's the statement. You got a clean cut haircut under there.
Right.
But,
you can't have the pompadour and the hat.
Yeah, man.
It just doesn't work out very well.
So that also addresses an aspect of this, which is rebellion.
Yeah.
Doing
absolutely.
Something outside of the norm. And that's a big part of it. And what we'll end up discussing, I'm sure, is how that evolved through the decades and how far that would ultimately go. You know, from donning a suit, maybe a not an average suit, maybe an exciting suit, mm-hmm. to ultimately, getting way out there with your fashion.
Yeah. Well, then, of course, at the same time, you had James Dean, who sort of popularized wearing denim, wearing jeans, so took another decade or so for it to really catch on, but...
James Dean and then Marlon Brando
yep,
with Streetcar Named Desire.
Yep.
Would we have that punk rock attitude without him and his leather jacket?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that certainly harkened back to that.
Yeah.
So, you kind of got this whole thing that came out of London, the whole Carnaby Street scene, which was slightly later in the 60s, but even earlier in the 60s, you had this little group from Liverpool called the Beatles, right?
The Beatles?
Yeah. Some of you may have heard of them. They rocked a longer hairstyle, for one thing. Looking at it now, it's utterly ridiculous to think that was a long hairstyle.
I know. The generation before them was looking at that going, these guys have long hair.
Right.
What are they doing with this long hair?
Well, there's that famous news conference in 1964 when they were asking Ringo, when was the last time you had a haircut? And he said, oh, it was this morning.
It was above the ears last night.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was the thing of it, was growing your hair longer than your ears, or over your ears would be considered
covering
long.
Your ears.
That would be considered long hair.
Yeah, that was considered long hair.
At least for a man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But of course, they, you know, also in their early incarnation, Brian Epstein dressed them in suits, you know, which kind of presaged the whole mod.
Yes. Yeah.
Look.
Yeah. Yeah. The cut of the suit was a bit different. It was modern. Mm-hmm. That's how the term mod came to be. And one other real influential aspect of their dress were their boots.
Right.
Which became known as Beetle boots, mm-hmm. Which were really a zip-up, high-top dress shoe that people started to refer to as Beetle boots.
A funny story is that I have a pair of Beetle boots that I was going to wear them today.
Nice.
But it's been so long since I wore them that they were moldy.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to throw them out.
Oh, my goodness.
I've
had that happen.
It was a sad day.
Leather in the bottom of your closet.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep, had that happen as well. I have a pair of Beetle boots that were not the only pair I ever had, but they were my favorite pair of all time. They had a lower rise sole mm-hmm. on them. They were so comfortable. They had a little square cut to the toe, and I loved them, but the soles wore out so badly they could not even be repaired, mm-hmm. but I still have them. I refuse to let go of them.
they're sort of a totem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, these were nice. They had the Cuban heel, you know, the undercut Cuban heel.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they were slick, but unfortunately, I just didn't wear them that much, and the mold took them.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
So, yeah, so I had, you know, I Want to Hold Your Hand. For the Beatles, which was like their sort of entree to the United States.
Yeah, that's a good one. I ended up going with Twist and Shout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that felt like the early impactful vibe of the Beatles, you know. Even though that was I believe an Isley Brothers song.
Not a
Beatles tune, but yeah.
But the thing about the Beatles, as we'll get into later, is that they morphed into something completely different.
Indeed.
But let's stay in the swinging London era. Mm-hmm. So one of the other ones I had was Small Faces.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Which they were sort of a fashion plate, if you will. The Carnaby Street thing. And for people that don't know, there was an area in London called Carnaby Street that had a lot of shops that had very fashion-forward clothing, and also fashion retro clothing.
Yeah.
There was a shop called, that we'll get into later, called I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet. Which had like a lot of Victorian and military uniforms and things like that. But, you know, you'd find people like Twiggy, and who was a fashion model of the time down there. And that was kind of an influence of fashion in London and beyond. But Carnaby Street was it for a few years.
Yeah. That's interesting. I'm thinking about how probably until about 66, it was the mod suit fashion.
That's right.
And then, I guess, psychedelic drugs.
Something happened there.
Something came in to affect a transformation into a much more liberated, free, flamboyant expression. Clothing that reflected that experience with those drugs, I suppose. Mm-hmm. The kind of psychedelic and surreal, but along the lines of the Small Faces, I was thinking their hair style was also unique.
Mm-hmm.
It was in that era of getting a little shaggier, but they had their own unique take on it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, which was a mod, very influential on the mod scene.
Yeah, and there's a great movie, if you're interested in mods, a great movie called Quadrophenia.
Indeed.
And The Who, of course, was very involved in the mod scene.
Yeah.
They were in, they had a band called, I think it was called The Small Numbers.
Yeah.
Was that the name of the band, the pre-Who band? which was definitely a mod outfit.
Yeah, yeah.
But for my Who entry, I had The Punk and The Godfather, which is, if you've ever seen the movie, and if you haven't, I suggest you see it, is all about mods and all about, you know, mod style.
Yeah, yeah. I found it interesting, the rivalry between the mods and the rockers.
Right.
Like, how different were they, really? It was...
Well, yeah, the rockers were very much in that Elvis sort of mold, with leather jackets and denim and wellies, as they called them,
right.
Boots,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
big,
yeah.
Big boots. And yeah, they're kind of like the Zoot Suit Riots of the 40s, you
right.
know, in the United States. They would, you know, get together and kind of pound on each other.
Yeah. I just thought, in terms of, you know, loving rock and roll and stuff, you know, why'd they have such a beef?
I don't know. It's just like people have to pick out differences even if they don't even actually have any.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, you know, you wear your carnation on the left side. I always wear mine on the right
yeah.
side, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, so, and, you know, as you mentioned, you know, something happened along about 1966. I think it may have been marijuana or LSD, which
yeah.
I think was actually legal at the time,
yeah.
kind of came along and sort of
I think you're right.
kicked open the doors of perception, if you will.
And I'm sure marijuana preceded that, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that was...
It's been around for a long time,
yeah.
but getting into part of the culture sort of thing kind of loosened people up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and so... You know, as the Beatles kind of went through that psychedelic phase, of course they stopped touring. They weren't really appearing publicly. But they just went more for growing their beards, wearing casual clothes, just kind of what maybe the average person, maybe a little hippie vibe. But then you get people like Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
Janis Joplin. Expressing the sort of full regalia of the last chapter of the 60s.
Yeah, definitely. Hendrix and Janis Joplin, of course, and I mentioned I was Lord Kitchener's valet, and he, of course, was living in London in the mid-60s, early, you know, up until 66, I think, or 67. And he brought that military band outfit sort of thing to his outfit in that era.
Interesting.
Which influenced a lot of people. I think even including the Beatles with
Sgt. Pepper.
Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah,
they
were wearing that sort of marching band garb.
Yeah. So then it all became about repurposing. You know,
yeah.
things, and instead of maybe creating a new style, they were discovering old styles or bringing it back and making it hip.
Yeah, and then, you know, for some of the men, it would become acceptable to wear some garments that were made for women.
Right.
Incorporate that into their look.
Mm-hmm.
Another person who I think would exemplify that would be Brian Jones from the Rolling Stones.
Right.
And then, of course, the Stones all got kind of glammy.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, Paisley, you know, sort of happened, you know, and that was trippy and psychedelic, and scarves.
Yes,
you
I was
going
to say the scarves. Hendrix donned scarves better than almost anybody.
Right, and of course, that sort of, when he came back to the United States, he was actually, you know, You would think that maybe he dreamed up a lot of this himself, but in the case of his gypsy look,
right.
there was actually a designer named Michael Braun, who was a clothing designer from Tampa, Florida,
wow.
who actually started dressing him.
Okay.
And so that whole gypsy look that he came from wasn't his idea exactly. I'm sure he embraced it, of course.
Yeah, I'm sure he dug it. Yeah, but... You know, a lot of famous people go to the talented designers, fashion designers and stuff. I always really loved the image of Hendrix with that shirt with the eyes on it.
Right.
I thought that was really cool. Somebody had to have printed that, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if there it was a video or they, you know, they didn't do, you know, videos for songs really, but there was that one song, you know, All Along the Watchtower, where they were all dressed like cowboys and sort of mod cowboys and stuff, and I always thought that was super cool.
Yeah, there's a poster on the inside of the Smash Hits collection, which was
right.
Not
maybe
a,
that's what I'm thinking of.
It was not a legitimate Hendrix release, but MCA Records, I think. But yeah, the fold-out poster inside was the three of them on horseback, looking like outlaws.
Right.
Yeah, gunslinging outlaws.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to take us up through our first break. We've got more low pass filter to come. Stick around. We'll be back in just a minute. Back with more low pass filter. We're talking fashion and music, and you know, I think we've made it up through the 60s. I think I'm trying to think of who else we had in the 60s that kind of exemplified.
I'm not sure what you might have on your list. Something I felt was kind of transitional from that era. And someone who I think when you are looking at it in terms of the influence on culture, on a group of people who maybe follow that band or that artist, the Grateful Dead.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
The followers obviously were called Deadheads. Tie-dye t-shirts were very much a signifier that you were into that.
Yeah.
Still with the long hair, but less kempt, less coiffed, more about just kind of letting it out, letting it be, letting your soul be more of your guide than what you look like on the outside, but yet there still was kind of a fashion influence there.
I think we probably didn't mention, you know, the floral prints, craft accessories like crochet and fringe, and of course bell-bottom jeans.
Yeah. What started the bell-bottom craze? I don't know.
You know, probably, again, repurposing vintage clothes again. Yeah. So you probably had a bunch of stuff left over, you know, like navy stuff that you could go into a surplus store and find navy bell-bottoms, you know.
The which pants was, would be flared.
Yep.
And so then it was an evolution of how flared can we make these pants.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool to have them be tight and then just...
Yeah, embroidery, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, the crafty sort of thing sort of came along.
Yeah,
absolutely.
If you were really serious about it, you'd get into embroidering or have someone embroider for you.
Right.
Yeah. Little flowers and, you know, maybe put some patches on them.
So everybody ditched their mini skirts and vinyl dresses and went to, you know, floral tops and, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah, flared sleeves, flowy.
Mm-hmm. Puffy shirts,
kind of a looser thing. It wasn't so much about being buttoned down and clean cut. It was it was actually the extreme opposite of that.
Right. So sort of rejecting the mods, really, in a lot of ways.
And that was taking place during the Vietnam War, and there was a whole generation of young people rebelling against that.
Absolutely.
And so the music, the fashion was a big signifier that you did not go along with that old regime of whatever you felt it was, imperialism or...
The freak culture.
Yeah, the freak culture. There you go. Yeah. Yeah, flying the freak flag.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, things were bound to get even freakier in the 1970s. You know, a lot of, you know, Hendrix died, of course, Janis died, Jim Morrison died. A lot of the people that associated with the psychedelic era, Mark Bolan, a little later, of course, but he was an influencer.
Brian Jones from the
Brian
Stones.
Jones.
Yeah, all of those people, man. That was.
So yeah, so in the 1970s, there's this guy named David Bowie came along, and really sort of, not just him, there were other bands, but an artist, but really took the scene into androgyny, into science fiction sort of jumpsuit-y themes, the whole space oddity thing kind of came along. And so I think we both had Bowie, I had Ziggy Stardust.
Starman
from the same record.
Reflected that character.
Yeah.
And that's something I think that was new. Perhaps it had been done before, but I think with Bowie and the Spiders from Mars, you know, after his initial sort of psychedelic folk stuff that he was working on, kind of spacey folk, you know,
he had kind of a mod look going before all that happened.
Sure,
He was very of a button down kind of guy.
Yeah, and so what I was gonna say is I think he's kind of one of the first musical artist to create an alter ego.
Yep.
To not be himself on stage, that he's this character that the music is sort of a story about, mm-hmm. in a way. And so the look of that character has to be very specific. And he, you know, developed this sort of precursor to an age of glam, mm-hmm. in popular music, and so going from flowy, hippie, psychedelic look to a very stylized, very intentional caricature, almost, you know, larger than life looking character on stage, which involved painting the face, mm-hmm. dyeing the hair, mm-hmm. And looking like nobody else on the planet.
Yeah, he succeeded wildly. And he didn't stop with that, of course, as the years went on. Of course, there's the Thin White Duke. And he kind of morphed into different things as he went along.
Yeah. The music evolved, the look evolved, the fashion. But there was always a core element, which is, I think, exploration. And so through that, there's someone who's giving multiple eras of influence upon fans and the pop culture.
Absolutely. Yeah, and then, of course, you know, offshoots of that, you mentioned glam. Of course, we had New York Dolls.
Yeah.
Mark bands Olin, like Sweet.
The Sweet. I love those guys.
Yeah, me too.
That goes back to haircuts.
Yeah.
They had the glam fashion, but somehow they figured out a haircut for long hair, but being something different from just your long hair hippie, or I don't know.
Well, the shag, of course.
Yeah.
Which I hear is coming back.
It may be.
Maybe I don't have to burn all those pictures from the 80s.
Put them back out on the mantle. The band Slade also kind of was there with that. And cropping the bangs in an odd way, but keeping the hair long, but then kind of layered. And it was a
business in the front, party in the rear, as they used to say.
There was probably a precursor to the mullet, in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, man.
I have the New York Dolls personality crisis down as a...
Yeah. I did not end up putting the Dolls on my list. Mm-hmm. I do think that they were part of that. Dolls are in an interesting place musically, because they're kind of a precursor to punk music, but they're definitely of this era of glam. And like I talked about wearing women's clothes, that was the whole thing about the New York Dolls. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, clothes cut for women.
Absolutely.
High heels that, you know, were ridiculous.
Right, which sort of presaged the 80s hair band situation.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that Sunset Strip of the 80s, the mm-hmm. hair bands, owe a lot to the New York Dolls. A band I put on my list that I almost didn't want to was Kiss, mm-hmm. because I don't know how much they were able to influence fashion. You couldn't dress like Kiss, at least the Kiss on stage,
right?
You know, unless you were trying to be an impersonator. They were a theatrical thing,
right?
I don't think was a big influence on fashion, although I'm sure their fans maybe had a similar kind of fashion of the time, just being into rock and roll, being into pre-heavy metal, kind of hard rock, heavy mm-hmm. rock stuff. But I did throw them on there because they themselves created a kind of fashion look. But again, it was very theatrical. And
well, yeah, and it plays into that whole sci-fi, science fiction sort of thing that was happening. I mean, even not with just the white bands, but also, you know, like the Commodores, and you know, if you looked at you know, a lot of the African American bands, you know, were also sort of adopting those kind of looks, you know.
Indeed, and I honestly didn't mean to ignore any of that, but I guess in a way I felt like it was kind of a world of its own, African-American fashion that really, in the 70s, kind of, you know, became really accentuated, really, you know, kind of out there. Mm-hmm. But stuff that they could wear, white folks could not wear.
Yeah.
They
could, but they look awfully silly.
It would look silly, perhaps. Yeah, but I wasn't as confident in where the fashion and the music were.
Again, I don't know if that's something that actually influenced streetwear that much. You know. What you know, just you know, ordinary people, be they you know black, white, or brown or whatever, probably weren't going to wear that walking down the street. Maybe later, as we get to the disco era, that was possible.
Perhaps,
they were that same sort of. They were in that same sci-fi kind of mold.
But those groups from like the Temptations, Glass Knight, the Pips, stuff like that, which was at that time buttoned down. Mm-hmm. Too, then, if you look at any of those 70s funk soul records, you know, fashion galore. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
And they look badass, and I only wished I could wear stuff like that.
Well, next stop in our journey in the 70s, of course, was the Ramones.
Yeah,
who 70s. I think their fashion look rings down to this day.
It does, and I did not put them on my list.
Yeah, so I have them on my list. Blitzkrieg Bop, the sort of representative Ramon song. You could have pointed towards any of them, but the look, of course, was leather jackets, whatever T-shirt you happen to have, clean or not, day, jeans, torn or otherwise, Converse.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a pair right now. Definitely
a simple yet effective fashionable choice. Goes back to that Marlon Brando leather jacket, the biker jacket.
Or the rockers.
Yeah. They just looked so cool in those leather jackets. Mm-hmm. And so anybody who was digging that vibe and that scene probably wanted to wear a jacket like that. The jeans were maybe still a little flared, but not as flared anymore, getting a little bit more straight leg.
Right.
And then, of course, they were worn to the point that they were almost falling apart.
Right.
Holes in the knees. And then with those Converse, it just, And they had kind of an updated Beatles haircut kind of thing going on, yeah, in a way. A little bit longer, but it wasn't a hit, it wasn't a long hippie or heavy metal haircut. But it was still longer hair.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and of course, kind of right in there, and just, you know, a year or two later, you had the Sex Pistols that came along, and I think really their look, of course, they came, their entire band was assembled in a clothing shop, essentially.
Yeah.
Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood, who owned a shop in London, sort of orchestrated this, a stylistic revolution with things like, you know, they also had the leather jackets. You know, this is where you started to see people dye their hair shocking pink or green, piercings, you know, drain pipe jeans. So that sort of eliminated the bell bottom look, or started pushing that off the scene. And that is another style that's still, you know, see you today, absolutely.
Yeah, that really sort of created a template for looking punk, like really fashionably punk. The Ramones were already giving a punk look and a punk attitude, but I think in people's minds when they think of punk, that kind of look of the Sex Pistols, especially Sid Vicious, comes to mind. You know, I wanted to look that cool. I never quite got there, but and it wasn't uniform. It everybody could express themselves uniquely, but it fell within a range of, you know.
Well, yeah, I think the idea was to look different than the mainstream.
Yeah.
Anything
yeah.
that looked different
yeah.
than what, you know, everyone else
yeah.
was wearing.
Of course, when enough people want to do that, they end up kind of creating their
yeah,
own mainstream in a
right.
way. But yeah, the Sex Pistols visually were massively influential.
Yeah. And then going into the break here, we got a minute or two before the break. We're not done with the 70s yet, because this thing in the, it was a, you know, very pivotal era for a lot of things. But then we had the disco era.
Yeah,
which also hugely influenced fashion, everyday fashion that people were wearing.
Right.
You know, and I had, of course, the Bee Gees, "Stayin' Alive." So that movie
yeah.
with John Travolta.
And I admittedly didn't really latch on to that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't consider the disco look, but it was huge.
Right. The three-piece white
yeah.
suit.
Yeah.
You know, snazzy shoes.
It was made it acceptable to wear a very big collar. To work, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course that all came out of the gay culture. The gay culture that was happening, you know, the disco era, of course, came directly out of gay culture. But you know, Travolta and his primping on screen and all that sort of thing made it sort of legit for heterosexual males
yeah.
to also, you know, kind of, you know, doll themselves up,
yeah.
if you will.
Yeah, something that became termed metrosexual at some point,
yeah.
I think. You're still masculine, but you want to look very coiffed.
Right. And, you know, there was a huge reaction against the disco era and culture. Some of you around at the time remember the phrase disco sucks.
Yeah. The Sex Pistol punks certainly didn't like it.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think in modern culture, it's sort of been legitimate. I mean, it's really come back into its own, and people realized, hey, these people were actually making pretty good music.
Yeah.
It wasn't just junk, you know.
Yeah.
But at the time, you know, there was a bright line drawn between
yeah.
that jeans t-shirt wearing crowd and the dude in the Armani, you know, suit.
Yeah.
You know. So. Well, that's going to take us into our second break, and we're going to be back with more Low Pass Filter, so stick around. seemed like a few seconds, yeah. But it really, you know, zipped by. And this show has actually zipped by really quickly.
It tends to, yeah. So you were talking about disco.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Got kind of spilled over into the 80s, the early 80s.
It really did. Sometimes we don't think of it that way. We tend to think that one decade just ends and the next one starts. Right. But really what takes place in the next decade has to come from what was coming from before it. It is interesting as a sort of human phenomenon that we kind of evolve with a sense of that 10-year marker.
And then we develop amnesia about what went before.
Yeah. And so where would you say it went from there into the 80s?
Well, I think early on you probably had the, you know, the skinny tie look, you know, yeah. The new wave bands that started to appear.
Yeah.
We mentioned the, you know, the Motley Crue and the hairband sort of thing started happening sort of mid-80s time period.
Yeah. Motley Crue in that era of the Sunset Strip was
Spandex.
About 1981,
right.
And that's when they released their first record, and that really kind of kicked off that era. I think the new wave thing is kind of related to disco for some of it,
yeah.
But blending with a bit of the punk edge, which is kind of interesting because those two things were supposed to be diametrically opposed things, but I think that's kind of the sound in what was called new wave, and some people would argue that new wave wasn't a real thing. Others would say it very much was.
Yeah. I was in a new wave band, so it was very real for me.
You wore that tie.
I did. In fact, I wore this tie in that band.
And it was its own kind of cutting edge. I mean, I don't think everything called New Wave was exactly this, but you have kind of a punk dynamic with maybe more of a disco beat to it, mm-hmm. or a more danceable beat. It wasn't, you know, that rigid in terms of a style. And I actually think that whole era was full of a lot of style and a lot of diversity in the music, you know, because you had kind of that New York art realm,
right?
Where Blondie, out of that
CBGBs,
yeah, but Blondie and maybe the Talking Heads would have really kind of been bringing in that new wave feel, but mm-hmm. then you ended up with the Cars,
right.
And the Knack and mm-hmm. stuff like that, and so it wasn't one homogenous fashion, but it was fashion of the new wave, the new era. Duran Duran, mm-hmm. Haircuts were important. Something I associate with that was the love of Patrick Nagel art.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't know what you call that. It's almost kind of a post-Warhol-esque kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Commercial yet artistically expressive,
right.
And that just feels really new wave to me. And that was when my real sort of individual consciousness started to come alive. You know, mm-hmm. 9-10 years old in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved all that stuff. Yeah. And then also MTV comes into the picture too.
Which was a huge influencer of fashion.
Yeah.
And we will not run out of time before we talk about things like hip-hop culture and rap that also hugely influenced fashion.
Yeah, for sure.
But before we get there, I think we need to mention The Cure.
Yeah.
Because we both had them on our list.
I had The Cure and Bauhaus.
Yep. I also had Bauhaus.
Because that
the
was
goth era.
Yeah, the goth era. I mean, that ties into kind of where I was coming from with this concept, which is, you know, I wasn't drawn in to being into punk and goth just because of the fashion. Mm-hmm. But the fashion reflected something that did draw me in, which was my way of feeling unique, and somehow just you feel it reflects something you feel inside.
It's your identity.
Yeah, and yeah. That, and it became, you know, not that I was a hardcore goth person, but yeah, I wanted in some way to look like those artists. Mm-hmm. You know, that requires a lot of all black.
Right, dyed black hair,
yeah.
Dark lipstick,
eyeliner,
nail polish, and then the use of things like Victorian and Elizabethan fashions, kind of steampunky.
Yeah.
Kind of thing going on.
And The Cure wasn't as dark as like Bauhaus or some of those other artists.
Sisters of Mercy,
yeah. But they still fit within that. And of course, hair, big, teased up, dyed black hair, mm-hmm. eyeliner, men wearing makeup and trying to look more feminine, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, happening in the background and continuing on, of course, was the hip hop culture. You had bands like Public Enemy and N.W.A. coming along, but before that, Run-DMC, which I had my Adidas, which was a total, you know, made the Adidas a fashion icon. Before there was Nike, there was Adidas.
Yeah, that's a whole interesting thing, because Adidas had a completely different origin story, mm-hmm. As a brand of shoe, as a company, a shoemaker company. Run-DMC, they brought back the denim.
Yeah.
And we don't always associate hip-hop culture with a kind of a rock and roll look, but that's what they thought was cool to do,
sure.
was to look a little more rock and roll, all black denim, but their Adidas shoes, which were kind of a b-boy hip-hop kind of a look. Of course, they didn't put laces in them.
Of course not. But that led to things like, you know, athletic wear, you know, was big, gold chains.
Yeah.
And then into the designer era.
Yeah.
So, you know, that became a status sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're wearing your wealth. That's true.
The look of hip-hop evolved to kind of a look of status.
Right. Before these bands, like we mentioned, Public Enemy and N.W.A., there was a whole different sort of hip-hop culture, which was sort of status-related, party-related, good times and that sort of thing, until it kind of evolved into the social consciousness movement as well. And kind of pushed a lot of that off, but still, you know, people were getting, you know, getting grills. They were getting like diamond inlaid teeth and that kind of stuff. And that comes back to the sort of wearing your wealth, ostentatiousness that a lot of the hip hop culture became, and maybe still is today. I don't know. I'm woefully ignorant about hip hop culture, but
I think in some sense, But hip hop, you know, or rap music, as it's termed in a more popular culture sense, it's not homogenous. There's different, there's different strains of it, different offshoots, you know. So like at the time, Public Enemy was looking a little bit more kind of urban and militant. Then you had De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest kind of mm-hmm. trying to go more for African heritage roots and the kind of harkening back to the Vietnam era, the Jimmy and Janis kind of hippie look, which people thought was radical for hip hop at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, are these guys even rap? Like, but it definitely was hip hop, you know. They just wanted to reflect a different side of things.
Yeah. Well, then I don't want to run out of time before we fast forward into the 90s and.
No, go ahead. I thought that we needed to mention Madonna for the
80s. Yes, absolutely.
Because I do think that she and her fashion directly influenced a lot of her fans, particularly young women in the 80s.
Absolutely. I have
culture.
Borderline.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you've Madonna.
Your mall culture and MTV culture. And so, you know, the way Madonna was wearing fashion, I think, while it was a bit out there, it was still accessible to people. So,
and that spilled into, like, you know, movies like Pretty in Pink and 16 yeah, Candles yeah, and yeah. and you know, the Molly Ringwald kind of
yeah.
kind of either adopted or was simultaneously wearing a lot of the, those yeah. kinds of you know yeah. tutus and you know.
Yeah, a little frill, a little lacy lace and tulle and stuff yeah. like that, and bangles, lots of bangles.
Yep, absolutely, and the tees de pair and yeah. the whole that yeah. whole nine yeah. whole nine yards. Yeah.
All right.
Well, now we before we run out of time, we can't neglect the grunge era.
Yeah, and I honestly fell short of addressing that. It was kind of in my mind, mm-hmm. And then I felt like my list was getting a little long. But yeah, gosh.
Yeah, Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit. You had a whole thing where coming out of Seattle, they call it the grunge look, which was you know, Pendleton shirts.
Yeah, or plaid flannels.
Workwear, lumberjack sort of wear. And I mean, I didn't, in researching this, I didn't really even realize that it had a practical purpose. And we should know that here in Humboldt County because of the weather in Seattle, which can be go from foggy and cold to
yeah.
sunny
yeah.
In a short period of time. So yeah. the layered look, you would have a Pendleton shirt
oh,
and
yeah.
t-shirt, and then yeah. you'd have to take that off and tie it around your waist. And
that became a look.
Boom,
yeah.
you know, your
yeah.
Kurt Cobain
became
also.
A look. Yeah, there's some details in that look that were very influential, and I was influenced by that to an extent too. Like if you weren't wearing work pants or jeans, you might like to have cutoff pants below the knee.
Mm-hmm.
But there was this particular thing where we would wear thermals underneath.
Right.
So cutoff pants with thermals. You might wear Converse, but you might also wear like combat boots
or Vans.
Or Vans, sure.
Yeah. Skater.
Yeah.
Fashion too. Yeah.
So I think an important thing about the grunge influence, fashion-wise, is it was an anti-fashion.
Right.
And,
absolutely.
It felt a bit punk. It felt mm-hmm. like kind of the next sort of punk attitude.
Or non-fashion, you could call it.
Sure. But it did make a fashion statement, and it's probably the most accessible fashion statement
yeah.
for the fans. Anybody could look like those artists on stage. You could look like Soundgarden or Nirvana or any
right.
of those people.
Thrift. You could just go to a thrift store. Yeah. yeah.
Either getting some of your dad's old clothes or going to a thrift store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yet, you know, like Kurt Cobain, he made it feel a little more punk because, you know, he would get like, you know, like chartreuse colored sweaters mm-hmm. or dye his hair pink, wear a green sweater.
Yeah, like
a little more
cartoon
punk.
Sunglasses and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when that hit, when Nirvana hit, when Soundgarden hit, Mudhoney,
mm-hmm.
to us that was just as punk rock as anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, we're just about out of time. I think we could also talk about what's happening now, and you know, you've got influencers like Lady Gaga. You know, I almost hate to say the word Kanye West, which is two words actually. I could just shorten it to Ye,
it's
but
Ye now.
Ye, he's got a fashion line and that sort of thing. Whether you know his personal
yeah.
problems will hold up that fashion yeah. line or not, I'm not sure.
I'm sure that he's influential fashion wise. I would say Lady Gaga. Kind of falls somewhere between Madonna and Bjork.
Right.
Like, I'm sure there's influence there, but a lot of times, like, nobody's going to be able to wear what Lady Gaga's wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, same with Bjork. You know, you're not
sure.
Generally, most people aren't going to walk around being able to emulate that, but there's still got to be some influence on how people reflect their identity through their fashion. And
well, you know, the world, I think, has just become so atomized. And so silo-ized, you
yes.
know, that we're all
yeah.
in our own silos, and there's just so much out there
yeah.
that, you know, you don't have the radio or MTV or whatever telling you what to look like or, you know, anymore, really. You know, maybe TikTok, I don't know, maybe, you know, that sort of thing might.
I totally agree with you. There are influencers of trends. I mean, we live in the era of
influencers. Yeah, absolutely.
But like you said, atomized. It's not galvanizing large groups of people together. It maybe is in a very macro way. It's influencing everyone in some way. But yeah, it's because of the technology of today and the short attention span sort of aspect. Every individual person is just sort of probably creating their own interpretation of what's hip and cool and trendy.
And nothing's really wrong anymore, you know, which is, in a way, I think it's a good thing, you know, is like, okay, you want to wear, you know, your hair is blue and you're wearing a floral dress, you know, and you're a 40-year-old dude, you know, that's, nobody's going to, I don't think anybody would, or most people are not going to look askance at that or say that's you do you,
still,
you know.
There's still strife socially in the world, but it's not so much that in-group, out-group kind of situation. I mean, because there's just so much going on.
Like
you can't really control it.
No. Although as hard as people try.
Yeah. But. And the change is so constant and rapid.
It's a churn, sort of, isn't it?
But there are still fashionable, trending things, and it's still attached to music.
Yep.
And how we reflect how we feel on the inside with our outer wear, as Mateo does every day, and I do. Although I've kind of restricted to sort of the one basic look every day. I kind of gave up a little bit.
Yeah, me too.
I found where I feel comfortable. And
whatever's clean is what I throw on. And sometimes, not even when it's clean.
Yeah, some of it's clean, some of it's not.
Yeah. Well, that was a interesting discussion, and unfortunately we're out of time for this month.
It happens.
It does.
Every time.
Just this hour usually just zips right on by, and that's what's happened this time. I want to thank everybody out there for listening and or watching Low Pass Filter.
Yeah. Let's give a shout to our Humble Access viewers.
I
think that's where we get most of our viewership, and I appreciate that. Would like to see a little more on the YouTube. But the peeps viewing through the local public access.
Well, Bandon, thanks again.
Oh, man, thank you. Yeah.
And what is our, I was going to say, what's our Gmail account? lowpassfilter2020@gmail.com.
Send us any comments, any suggestions in the comments on the YouTube page.
Yeah.
Let us have it, whatever you want to say.
Yeah. And we'll see you next time on Low Pass Filter.